I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Is hair a material?
Are biscuits a material?
Are crystals a material?
Is plastic a material?
Is porridge a material?
Can gases be a material?
Are eggs a material?
Is water a material?
What do you call everything that isn't a material?
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at your question.
And yet you continue to do so.
Hello and welcome to Handmade, the making podcast with real talk about materials. As ever, I'm your host Anna Pajewski, and this episode I talked to wig maker Kat Lim about hair. We were lucky enough to be able to actually record this face to face in person, sitting socially distanced, in my little garden in London. So a quick note to say sorry about all the windy microphones. You might also hear some magpies having a bit of a fight and a passing helicopter in the background. So, you know, all the usual associated dangers while recording outside in central London. But it was a real joy to sit down and chat to Kat about the material and craft of hair. And I started by asking her how she first got into handmaking with hair.
I originally started from a costume sort of background, where I did a degree in costume making and always sort of had an interest in headwear and millinery, and I sort of veered into wigs quite in my second year, I think it was, where I made wigs with using wool and sort of bits of fabric and PVC and stuff. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really, it was good. But yeah, obviously I didn't sort of venture into using hair at that point. But I sort of really like the idea of it, making foundations and, you know, working with making the wigs as part of the whole piece.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, making the costume and then the wigs just, uh-huh, just go with it, sort of the whole project. So yeah, then after uni, I sort of worked in character costume companies, making large sort of children's TV characters, and
nice.
So yeah,
that
it was
sounds
good.
Fun.
Yeah, it was interesting. Dressed up as a Teletubby in my time.
Have you?
Yeah. So yeah, I really like that, and sort of like the sort of sculptural side of stuff. It was all sort of,
yeah.
It sort of worked within it. But then I worked as a deputy wardrobe mistress in the West End, and I had to look after these wigs. And I was like, yeah, I love it. I really like wigs, but I didn't really have any sort of refined sort of skills. So I decided to do a wig making course at the Wig Academy in Eastbourne, where you sort of learned from scratch sort of how to get the hair all sort of set underneath the wig, and take a foundation, do a foundation fitting, and make the wig from scratch.
Wow.
As well as sort of learning how to make hair pieces, and I think I've made a moustache as well, so
cool.
Sort of like, yeah, everything was covered.
yeah
so yeah, that was good. And then from that, I then got a job working for a company called Alex Rouse Wig Company in North London, that makes wigs for film and TV. So yeah, I've just been there for over 10 years now, I think. So I've sort of learned a lot there, and I've sort of gone down the sort of avenue of specializing in weaving hair.
Okay.
Sort of, yeah, make hair pieces, mm-hmm, rather than sort of full wigs.
What sort of film and TV have you worked on that we might have heard of?
Yeah, so the first thing I worked on actually was the last two Harry Potter films, which was very exciting.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was really good. It was a cool thing to start off with.
Yeah.
And obviously, yeah, seeing the hairpiece we worked on the big screen was pretty exciting.
That's cool. Mm. When you have a project like that, like what proportion of actors on the Harry Potter films are wearing wigs?
Quite a few, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are a lot more than I realised before I started.
Right.
Even if it's not like a full wig, there'll be like little bits or
pieces
sort of added in to sort of make the hair sort of a fuller or
a bit kind of caricature-y almost.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe they might need sort of ageing. They might need little bits of wisps of grey put in there or whatever. So, yeah.
That's so cool.
Magic behind the scenes.
Nice. Yeah.
But, yeah, it's funny. It all sort of starts off with wrapping their head in cling film, though. That's the the glamour.
Yeah.
You sort of obviously would get the hair as smooth as possible and then wrap the hair in cling film and sellotape. And then you sort of draw on all the all the hairline and the around the ears and just sort of get that. Create a nice sort of mould of the head, which then you sort of pop off and bulk it out on a sort of malleable head block that's made with it's like a canvas block. I think it's filled with cork, maybe. And then, you just sort of use that. You pad it out with tissue paper, and then that works as a sort of malleable sort of base to work on. It's interesting sort of seeing it from the sort of beginning stages, comes together.
So you've got your kind of film and TV work, but did I see online that you also kind of do your own more sort of, I don't know if artistic is really quite the right word, but how would you describe the other work that you
do? I think it's been about 5 years now, so I've been doing things under the name the posticherie, which is postiche is the French word for hairpiece. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Made it sound very glamorous. I've sort of been doing my own bits and that sort of editorial commissions and music videos and stuff. I've just sort of been working with people's making bespoke pieces. Which it's been really good, sort of just on the side. But I'm just sort of wanting to do a bit more hairpiece making, really, and sort of have more like an online sort of postiche shop that people can sort of purchase their own hairpieces for like special events, maybe.
So it wouldn't be sort of made to measure stuff. You'd do more kind of off the shelf style things.
Yeah, people can just sort of have the.
Very cool. So let's take a little step back a bit, I guess, after talking about kind of how you got to where you are now. And I'd love to talk to you about the materials that you work with. Obviously, hair is one, but it strikes me. So you mentioned the cling film and then a foundation. What are the kind of, the materials that you work with and how do they sort of work under the hand?
The hair that we use, generally use human hair, which would be sourced from a hair merchant. And they'd quite often need to sort of send them a colour sample and then they'd sort of source it and they'd sort of, they'd find the hair and, get it all sort of the same length and that's how it worked. But then there are, I've bought hair from other places. I've bought some from a flea market in Barcelona before.
Okay.
And also my husband grew his hair quite long and he cut it not that long actually and I've still got that. So source that. But there's, you can also, as well as human hair, there's you can use yak hair, which works really well for facial pieces.
Oh, interesting.
It's sort of got that sort of wiry texture. It works
quite
well.
Yeah.
Especially if you can set it on really small cocktail sticks you can get like a really good sort of texture from that. You can steam it on sticks and get quite interesting sort of curly textures. there's yak hair and also mohair from the Angora goat.
Okay, soft.
Yeah, really soft. That works really nicely for like eyebrows or...
So you have to do eyebrows as well?
It can be done. It's, quite incredible.
Yeah.
Getting that sort of the way all the hair sort of lies nicely to sort of follow the growth of the hair, the eyebrow. Mohair is also used for hairlines. So we'd use that within a wig.
Okay.
That works really nicely just to sort of really have a nice fine sort of edge.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't get a hard line and no one would ever know it's a wig.
Yeah, I guess that's the whole idea.
Yeah, right? So yeah, it's a funny one. You don't want anyone to sort of really pick up that it's a wig generally. Right. So it's sort of hidden, hidden thing.
Do you ever use sort of synthetic materials, like plastic?
You can do, I sometimes with stuff that I've been working on for my own prosthetry work, I do sometimes use synthetic hair just to sort of, if I'm trying out ideas or just, just because obviously it's far easier to sort of just purchase that.
Yeah. Is it cheaper as well? Or?
Yeah. Because hair is, it's very expensive.
Okay.
Synthetic's good just to sort of try some bits out. Or I've been doing lots of bits with sort of plaiting and stuff, and that works quite well because it's sort of a bit easier to, you don't get like the sort of shorter fibres. You can just, obviously the synthetic's all one length that sort of works well for, trying out ideas. And you can steam it as well. So you can set it like human hair. But
So the same sort of heating and moisture techniques.
Yeah. Some can use with, you can use them with like straighteners and things like that. You have to be quite careful. Some of them you can't
melt.
Yeah.
I guess.
I've tried it then. Yeah. Oh, some of them
a bit of a sticky mess.
You can, some of them like some slightly more expensive synthetic hair you can use on with heat. It's cool. You can do quite a lot with it. You can steam it and set it, and someone's put in like a pressure cooker just sort of to get that sort of really set sort of shape. I have been looking at other sort of, because I'm really keen to try and find like ethically sourced hair. It's all a bit of a random thing where it all is. I don't really know. It's not
regulated.
So it's all a bit the second it comes off someone's head, you're not really sure where.
So interesting. It comes from. I read that book called Entangled.
Oh yeah.
Is it Entangled?
Yeah. Emma Tarley.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. And if I remember rightly, in that book, she tries to sort of follow it's really about the hair industry and sort of where is it sourced throughout the world, whose head is it grown on, how is it collected, and then trying to follow from that point to the end consumer is like really difficult. And as you say, there's no regulation, there's no sort of set pathways for all of these things to travel around the world.
Yeah. And sort of quite often things are marketed as human hair, but in actual fact, when sort of tests are done on it, it's sort of it could be mixed with animal hair, or there are synthetic hair sort of put through it. So yeah, you don't really know what you're getting. Some of the time, obviously, from reputable hair merchants, it's sort of a different thing. But it's a weird one. Also, you can get hair that might be sort of been sourced from sort of rubbish dumps or just sort of combings, they call it. So it can be sort of found, and then it gets sort of processed to such an extent that it sort of gets coated in silicone and all sorts. So it sort of looks glossy and luscious, but then actually after a bit of washing and wearing it, it all sort of deteriorates and can sort of turn into a big bundle. Sort of matted up. So it's a strange thing, and it's, I don't really know how it can be regulated really, because once it's off someone's head, it's sort of I was looking into different hairs and things, and I suddenly remembered that my friend told me about this thing. I think it's sort of in the industry, it's known as diamond fiber, I think it's called.
Okay.
It was all this mad sort of distant conversation I had with her. I looked into it, and I think I'm not sure how you say the name, but epilay, and it's the white hairs that are sourced from someone, like maybe I guess probably it'd have to be generally a woman who has graying hair, and so they pick out all the grey hairs from like the darker hair, and that's it's called epilay, which is sort of quite an interesting one, and obviously very expensive. I don't know about you, but if I ever get like a grey hair or something, it's always a bit weird and sort of sprouts out and like a bit of a sort of coarser or something. It's sort of a bit of a texture.
So my hair's actually incredibly thin and fine. I've never noticed a coarser one. I've got greys in my little short bits at the front here, but I tend to cut it very short. I don't tend to notice it.
Natural highlights.
Something to look forward to though. You mentioned their processes. Was there anything else to say about, you know, the use of straighteners or drying techniques or anything like that?
We would use a wig oven if we were drying a wig.
Cool.
Yeah. which is sort of like a heated box, which you set the temperature to, and it's just sort of like a big hairdryer, really, with sort of shelves inside. Nice. And you sort of, it's good for just drying, because if they've been washed, or if you're setting something in rollers, that works well to sort of just really get that
nice
good sort of styled finish to it. It's funny, so I have to make sure things aren't left in the oven too long.
A bit crispy. So they don't dry out. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
So I haven't actually started using it at all, but I have been looking at possible sort of ethical, sustainable options rather than using human hair all the time. So maybe using flax fibre, as it's soft and sort of has that sort of nice human hair sort of quality.
Really? That's so interesting.
I think, so I'm not really sure if you could, I'm not sure how well it would style. I don't know if you can steam it like you would.
I guess it's like cellulose, right? If it's from plants, it would be like, I'm sure they treat paper and other kind of cellulose stuff with sort of steam and heat and like.
Because straw, you can sort of get shape with straw,
right? Yeah, so willow weaving as well. There's like heat and water. Yeah, it's probably similar.
Maybe we'll look into flax, and also hemp, because it's really sustainable and it grows fast. Quite a good one.
That's cool. Is there anyone that you know of working with like hemp wigs at the moment?
I don't know. I have heard of sort of rumours of people sort of using it. I did hear someone that they were a vegan and didn't want to use human hair. So they would only have their wigs made with hemp fibre.
Interesting.
So it must work. It must look fairly realistic. So I need to get some and
let me know.
Yeah. New line.
Do you have to dye the hair as well? Or does it come dyed?
Well, it sort of depends. It's sort of the hair that you would, if hair's donated, it has to be virgin hair, which is totally unprocessed, totally undyed. So it's just sort of a clean slate to do anything to it. If we were sending a hair sample off to the hair merchant, I think, they do colour and source it. It's not always natural, like obviously trying to find enough natural hair in a certain colour is going to be tricky. So it can be dyed. We quite often, if we are doing it, we'd use you can use like what you'd use on your head, just packet hair dye, or sometimes more like fabric dylon dyes work better.
Oh, interesting.
To sort of last longer.
Yeah,
because it will fade after time.
Sure. Can you talk about maybe a favourite project that you've worked on, or one that really stands out?
Yeah. From personal, so one of the projects I did with the prostitutery was a sort of floor length, sort of Victorian style sort of wigs. So it was a really fun project. It was a bit of an undertaking because they had to get these long layers in. So in the end, I bought some Jewish wigs from a charity shop in Stamford Hill as a sort of base that I sort of worked on, and then made these really long sort of ladders with wefts that I just sort of attached with ribbon. So it was like these long sort of pieces, which once the hair was sort of layered on top of each other, you couldn't see there was all these different lengths. But yeah, it was good. It was when I was living with my flatmate. Used to be my flatmate was a maker at the Royal for the ballet.
Oh, okay. Is it the Royal Ballet? Royal Ballet School? Royal.
What was it? The
like Covent Garden.
Yeah, she was making these beautiful like tutus and silk dresses for these ballet dancers, and I was making these really long, hairy sort of carpets on the floor, and I think so, she was sort of just going about making her dress, and then I think she put it up onto the table to sort of check the hem, and there was just sort of like a sea of black hair all caught along the bottom of it, and she was like, I think you need a hoover.
Not ideal working hardness.
Very sort of different projects going on.
Amazing. So where did your piece end up? What was the
They've been used a couple of times actually for editorial shoots.
Cool.
They're just boxed up in a cupboard at home at the moment. I sort of get them out every now and then just to check they're all right. Because the Jewish wigs on at the top, they were human hair.
Okay.
Because they looked, I could sort of dress them.
Yeah.
And then I sort of I just like safety pinned these sort of ladders into it. I sort of check on them every now and then, check they're all right.
Nice. So that kind of, that's an example of one of your projects, I think, that kind of goes over the line from sort of a practical wig solution that, as you say, most people would want to not look like a wig, to look like realistic.
Yeah.
Floor length sounds like it was supposed to be like a wow factor, like yeah, more of a, like an artistic piece, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked sort of doing quite sort of extravagant sort of things, as well as the sort of natural natural bits where you just sort of don't know it's there sort of thing. So that's sort of interesting.
Yeah, so cool.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Oh, yeah, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, so you've talked about wig making and then also weaving techniques. What was the difference between those?
So generally wig making is wigs are made by knotting hair onto a sort of a fine like foundation, which has been made of a net almost. It's a lace, but sort of it looks like a sort of... a sort of net sort of material, which would you sort of make it into different sections that sort of go up the head, and yeah, you'd use a tiny little knot to knot the hairs.
Wow, that sounds painstaking.
yeah it's an amazing sort of discipline.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was, it can be thicker at the nape, but then when you get to the top, it's sort of single hairs along the, along the hairline, so yeah, it's quite impressive to
How long does that take to make a wig?
I guess ideally you need about 2.5-3 weeks. Wow. That would be the ideal, just sort of,
amazing.
Get it all made. But after you knot it all, you work back through it and snip the roots out, because if you have that turnover where you make the loop of the hair, obviously then the hair's sort of backing up on itself, so it can get a bit sort of matted. So you go back through afterwards and snip all those roots out.
Amazing.
So yeah, it's but then once that's done, you can style and dress it like
nice.
You would.
Yeah, and then so the knotting process is different from weaving, is it?
Yeah, so weaving the weaving process is done on using weaving sticks.
Okay,
And you have 3 strands of thread that you then weave the hair through. Sort of like a sort of M shape, sort of back and forth through these 3 threads, and you just make lengths of weft that can then be, I mean, they can be used, you can stitch them onto a foundation and make a wig that way, but I use that weft to make sort of ponytail pieces. You can sort of coil them up on a cord as well, and once you've got this strip, you sort of twist up on a cord, so you get like a sort of like a ponytail sort of section that then can be made into pieces that way.
Right.
I really like that process of using the weft and for different outcomes.
Yeah. And does that overlap with sort of textile weaving as well?
Kind of. It's not like you don't use anything as elaborate as a loom. It's just sort of literally two wooden sticks.
Okay.
But so you're just working along the sort of left to right direction to get the weft. You don't you don't ever have any sort of warp or anything. So you don't. Yeah. But I think I like the sort of the process of it, and maybe coming from a sort of costume side of things, I do.
Right, yeah, of course.
Like to sort of use those sort of skills, like using sewing machine and because actually one of the random purchases I got over lockdown was a vintage overlocker on eBay.
Oh, cool.
It's really cool. It's a Japanese one and it's orange. So it's pretty cool. once I got that, I've just been sort of running bits of weft through it just to sort of see how that would work. And it's quite good. It sort of finishes the edge and makes it a bit more sturdy. And
right, yeah.
Yeah, I've just been enjoying sort of tinkering with that and sort of made... a way, it's nothing crazy, but just a way that you can cut the weft, because handmade weft you generally can't really cut because it's sort of all on this thread, and once you cut it it's all just going to unravel there's no way to sort of keep it attached. But machine made weft generally is all sort of really glued and has lots of sort of I think it's very just glued and it sort of doesn't come apart. But I found a way if I run it through my overlocker and a sewing machine a couple of times.
Nice.
I made this sort of cuttable weft, which I think could be good if people can just sort of buy it by the meter.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of going back to those like haberdashery days of spending and time spent in haberdashery and sort of buying things by the meter, like fabric and stuff. So
that's cool.
I like the idea.
Should we talk about these samples that you've plonked on the table between?
I've got a few bits, probably not super helpful for a podcast, but
we'll try and describe them out loud. One of them looks like you've attacked a small school child and snipped her lovely plaited ponytail off from the top of her head.
Snipped her hair.
That's really long. It's like nearly 2 feet long.
Yeah, it's long. So that's a three-stem switch, which I made sort of 13 inches or so of weft that I then held up within a... So it's got this, you can see it in there, like a little coil. So that's the weft in there.
Oh, wow. Like, so it just looks like a normal, like... plait that would be on someone's head, but on the inside there's hidden the sort of structure of it.
The weft is sort of curled around this cord that I sort of stitch as you go, and then you just sort of sew them all together and make them into a ponytail piece.
That's cool.
Yeah, this one actually because I'm wanting to sort of as part of the online shop wanting to do maybe sort of bridal wear, I've done this one with blue thread. So it could be your something blue hidden in there in your elaborate hairdo.
Nice. I definitely want to hear about the online shop, but let's just talk about this other piece just quickly.
So, this is just some grey hair. I think this was some hair I bought from a gentleman in Germany on eBay. this is some of the
And he was just someone that would grow his hair and sell it on eBay?
I think, yeah. I did sort of ask him and he wasn't overly forthcoming, so if it was his, I was sort of, asking questions, but hopefully.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Maybe it's his hair. I don't know. This is just some of the weft I've been making.
So, this one is not plaited or anything. It's just sort of like a thin strip of hair that's sort of attached at the top to... What is it attached to, actually?
It's just cotton thread.
Oh, wow.
So those would be the three threads that would be caught sort of tightly wound around sticks. Yeah. And then they're sort of, woven.
It's so intricate. You must have amazing eyesight. A steady hand.
Yeah. Sort of get into sort of a bit of a, into a rhythm of it. It does go quite quickly. And I think that's another thing as well I like about the weaving process. I feel it sort of comes up a lot quicker and you can sort of, I could sort of make a hairpiece in a day, whereas a wig obviously takes a lot longer. I like the sort of quickness of it.
That's cool.
Creating something sort of that you can use straight away almost.
Yeah.
Then what I've been doing is just sort of running that through the overlocker just to get the So it just sort of keeps it a bit sort of neater, and then it doesn't sort of fall apart as well. Because I think with a bit of wear, it does sort of come apart and sort of does sort of, But yeah, you don't need to cut the, I never cut the roots down, because I get with the weaving process, you can sort of pull the hair a bit, you can be a bit more flexible with it.
Oh, okay.
So you don't really, there's not much root there.
Very cool. I wouldn't even have noticed that. So you mentioned your website, and you're starting to sort of make off-the-shelf pieces. Bridal stuff. What other kind of markets are you looking into?
I don't know. Anyone that fancies...
A bit more hair,
So, yeah, once I've got... Once I worked out this hair weft by the metre, people could sort of... have that. You can either sort of like clip it into your own hair, or even make like a sort of tight sort of cornrow in your own hair, and then sort of stitch it on. So
That's cool. Do people get in contact with you with a specific requirement, or
Like get a in touch
private with, customer, I guess.
I like the idea as well of sort of keeping the hair as a, like a keepsake, and sort of like memento of someone. It's a niche market, but there might be someone. Actually, a friend of mine has got a lock of her mother's hair from when she was a child. Okay. And she was like, oh, I should give it to you. So I was like, oh, it could be nice. I'd like to sort of make it into something for her so she can keep it, rather than just having like a ponytail in
like
a drawer.
Like an object.
Yeah. Like sort of going back to sort of Victorian mourning jewellery, and like how they would keep sort of locks of people's hair as a sort of loving memento, rather than... I think it sort of started with Queen Victoria, didn't it? She'd quite often have her hair made into jewellery pieces, and she'd pass it down to family members or give them as presents.
It really reminds me of did you watch Gentleman Jack on the BBC? The woman Anne Lister, who it's based on, she used to, I'm actually not sure if it was consensual, I should check this, but she used to cut samples of her lover's like pubic hair and would keep those as a memento. Maybe that's not the market you're thinking of, but
I know I'm gonna end up with bags of all sorts, aren't I?
That's true. The police are gonna be knocking.
What is this?
I mean, there's obviously like sentimental value in the material, I guess.
I think another thing that sort of, I guess, sort of around that time, that people would keep locks of their friends' hair and sort of put them in scrapbooks and sort of write poetry around them. And it's like a little, memories of them.
It's funny though, because a part of me is like, oh, it's so gross to keep someone's hair. And like, there's this funny sort of, it's a fine line, isn't it, between just a material and something that we kind of all have on our bodies. And then it kind of crosses over this weird line into something that's a bit like, freaky and like a bit creepy.
Like that was on someone's like, head.
Disembodied sort of uncanny valley type stuff. I guess you must be immune to that now that you just work with it all the time.
Obviously it was sort of a bit of a strange one to begin with, but now it's quite often to make the hair sort of tighter knot, or sometimes I'm weaving as well, I'll just chew the hair a bit, just for the thing.
just soften it a bit.
I think sort of maybe sort of the process of the saliva and the chewing, it sort of softens the keratin or something, I don't know. So it gets it a bit sort of more malleable, and quite often just answer the door with a tuft of hair in my mouth to the postman. So you sort of forget what you're using sometimes.
Amazing. So I guess this is a material that, as we were just saying, you know, we all have it on all of our bodies, and a lot of it kind of ends up in the bin or in the drain, or kind of as a waste material. Is there any use for kind of waste hair?
I've been collecting a bag actually of bits of, sort of fallen on the floor and I've been making things, or too short sort of pieces that I can't use. Once you get a ponytail of hair, you have to sort of hackle the hair to get all the shorter ends out. Okay. Otherwise, it all sort of mats together.
Yeah.
So, any sort of loose bits like that, sort of that I can't use for anything, I've been collecting. And I am really keen to send it off to this environmental charity in San Francisco. It's called Matter of Trust. Mm-hmm. And they actually use all sort of byproduct from barbers and pet groomers and sort of any sort of natural hair that people generally discard. They actually use it and make mats. They sort of put it through a needle felting machine, sort of make these big mats of hair that can be used to help with oil spills, and they put them around storm drains to stop sort of pollutants getting into the waterways and stuff. So I really like that idea. Sort of, it seems like a really good thing to do with all these
loose
hair that I've got collecting.
And a cool application of, like, I guess it's like the chemistry of hair, like the fact that it wants to cling onto oil and not water. I guess so.
Yeah, it sort of works really well. The structure of it sort of absorbs all the pollutants, and it doesn't sort of swell up like a sponge. It's all the oil and stuff sort of goes into the nooks and crannies that are on the structure of the hair. And sort of,
that's so cool.
It's all quite incredible. Actually, it has some facts. I looked up, I was like, it's so clever how they make these sort of mats that do so good.
Good for it.
One filter can remove 1 gallon of oil from water in just 2 minutes.
What?
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, that's what they said. Anna from the future's coming, isn't she? Totally wrong. I think it's quite cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it sort of obviously works far better than any sort of synthetic thing than man-made product. So
I wonder if they can reuse that. Like, do they then just shampoo the filters the oil out?
Yeah, I was wondering that, because I then wondered, what do they do with this sort of oil-laden hair, I guess?
Landfill?
Yeah.
I mean, the oil's quite valuable, so they
might bring it out. I did look into what they do with it afterwards, but I couldn't actually find out what happens. But I guess it's better than hair's better than putting some sort of synthetic thing.
Definitely, I reckon they'd probably use some sort of synthetic sponge or like chemicals, even. I don't know.
Sort of dispersal.
Grim.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go, hair contributing to the happy environment. amazing. So if people have enjoyed hearing about crafting with hair and sort of the industry of hair, where can they go to find out more?
There's a BBC Three documentary. It's from quite a while ago, 2008 or something, with Jamelia.
Oh, yes.
She did a documentary called Whose Hair Is It Anyway? Mm-hmm. And she went on a sort of process to try and find the hair that she uses in with her hair extensions, where it came from, and sort of even like whose hair it was. And so she could look into she went and looked scientist.
Okay.
Forensic scientist. He actually analysed her hair extensions.
Yeah.
Could find out sort of maybe almost like the region of where it came from and like
sort of
the diet.
Genetically. Mm. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Sort of almost like that. They could work out that she ate a lot of fish from the proteins that were in the hair.
No way.
And like pollutants that were in like the sort of heavy metals that were within the structure. So they sort of worked out it was probably quite a polluted area that she was living in.
Yeah.
So yeah. She gets quite into it. Like, she wants to find the person. They're like, it could be anyone.
But that's cool.
Sort of, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to watch that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I just found it online. It's on,
cool.
And also, there's a good documentary on Refinery 29 called The Truth About Where Hair Extensions Come From, which is just on their website. And yeah, that's really interesting. And there's a man called Dan Choi, and he is trying to source hair ethically and sort of going into sort of Vietnamese communities and cutting women's hair and giving them a fair price for it, because at the moment they sort of are getting a pittance, and it's mad, but both good things to watch.
There's a helicopter circling above us. The perils of living in London. We often get helicopters. Sometimes they just like hover above our house for ages.
Suspicious going on.
Yeah. And if people have enjoyed hearing about your work and want to have a look at some of the pieces, where can they go to see you online?
Yeah, so my website is thepostichery.com, and on Instagram it's @thepostichery.
Amazing. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast to talk to me about hair. Mm-hmm. It's something that I don't think I really knew anything about it at all. So thanks for coming to tell me about it.
Thanks so much, Anna. It's been great. Thank you.
So that was the amazing Kat Lim. Thanks so much to her for coming around and for speaking to me for the podcast. That's all for this week. As always, I'd be very grateful if you could like and subscribe the podcast in all the places that it is possible to do so. If you'd like to give a one-time financial donation to support the running of the podcast, you can do so at supporter.acast.com/handmade. If there's any materials that you'd like to hear covered on the podcast, then do get in touch. We're at Real Talk on Twitter, that's R-I-A-L Talk. And on Instagram, we're at Handmade Pod. You can also email us at realtalkpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks as always to Dave Shepherd for our marvellous cover art and to Alex Lathbridge for the music mix. Next week, I'll be joined by materials scientist and author Anissa Ramirez to talk about the alchemy of us. But until then, thanks very much for listening, and I'll see you next time on Handmade.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.